Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and the homie Will Tear Out. We're also part of Amp Pyre Media. Check us out at amppyremedia.com. We got a special guest, so I'm going to go right into our reads. Our Amp Pyre Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kahn Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kahn, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, make sure you subscribe to our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app, with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Amplifier shows as well as other great content. Also, don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on our IG, Urban Sports Scene, and also and our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. I mean, Facebook page, excuse me. Also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T would normally say it, so I'm going to say it for him. Let's get into our tradition. The pregame, here's what we have on tap. We'll talk with one of the best young boxers in the game, junior welterweight Gary Antoine Russell. Then at 8:20, we'll talk with Norfolk State University men's basketball coach Robert Jones. Norfolk State enters the NCAA tournament as the 16th seed, and they are taking on the number one seed the number one seed Baylor Bears in the East region. Finally, I'll talk about the Commanders acquiring quarterback Carson Wentz and signing offensive coordinator Scott Turner to a contract extension. Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus Washington Commanders reporter Donna Hopkins will jump on the show for that. All right, let's get right into it, man. I'm kind of geeked and kind of boosted. Y'all know I respect this young man so much. Right now I have soon-to-be champion junior welterweight Gary Antoine Russell on the line. Welcome back to the urban sports scene. How was the grind, my man?
Man, I appreciate you announcing me like that, first of all.
Oh, man, appreciate you.
Everything is everything, man. Everything is good so far. It's still maintaining.
Yeah, man. Hey, first off, I want to say I'm proud of the fight that you put out there a couple weeks ago. I was watching it, and me and folks on this show, we're big fans of you. The first time we saw you fight, we were saying like, "Oh, this dude got it. He got that dog. He's got it. It's all on him." You know what I'm saying? So first off, I want to say I'm proud of you. I think you did a great job in that fight against Victor Postal. But for you, a couple weeks ago. How, in terms of your performance, what do you think you showed the world?
Oh, man, that's a great question, man. I think I showed the world that I'm definitely not to be played with. Me personally, as me being a critic to myself, I would grade myself a D.
Wow, really?
Yeah, my father, he keeps saying he'd give me a B. Uh-huh. Right? He say, beat the postal, he never been stopped. He fought Terrence Crawford and he fought Josh Taylor. Uh-huh. Both of them undisputed, got all the belts, titles, and stuff like that. I said, Dad, but you still trained us to perfect a certain craft. When we're going in there to perform, we purposely go in there to execute what we perfected. If we don't do that to a T, then we gotta be honest to ourselves. We can't just go overall, have respect to the craft. He going overall like, all right, this is a high caliber fighter. Make the poster, he done fought both of these guys. He had knocked out Matiste,
yeah,
and et cetera. He just kept going on and on and on about his career. So I was like, all right, I can't say nothing. I can't really say nothing. But in my mind, I'm like, betterment is the key. You know, I'm gonna just keep this to myself. You know, for now, I'm gonna bite the bullet and just take heed to what he's saying, because it is facts. You know, I can't get mad at that. I can't really rebuttal to that. You know, I'm like, all right. Okay, then, you know, so let's go with it.
Look, man, that's a champion mentality, though. You know what I mean? That's how, in terms of other sports, that's how all the greats have kind of go about it. And even this sport, like, you know, look, Floyd Mayweather Jr. in basketball, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, you name it. Like, that's the mindset, though, to be a champion. I dig the mindset. Though I thought you graded higher than Adido, bro. I think we're higher than
Adido. I think that's just so special, though. You know, I think that's a special thing. You know, as far as the competitive mindset and just having the certain environment. You know, like how you brought up all of these greats. You know, Floyd Mayweather and a couple more fighters. You know, I think what made them that way was their environment that they was in. You know, they all had their fathers. They was family oriented. It was bound. You know, and that was their kind of like life support.
No, I vibe that. You know, I'm the same way with my family. So I, anytime it's wild. Like since we've interviewed, you know, the team Russell. That's one thing I admire is that the close knit family that you all have. Forget just the career of boxing. Just I appreciate that. You know, because you know, for me, you know, having my father around when he was living, and just like my brother and whatnot. All of us together, we and my sister, like, and my mom, we had this bond. And I just always dig that with y'all, like, the bondage that your family has.
Man, I appreciate that.
You know what I mean? Because it's deep, man. It really is. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. I'm chatting with junior welterweight Gary Antoine Russell. All right, man. So, you know, even though, again, you're higher than a D, to me, I mean, we're going over that. I'm over that right now. Who are you aiming to fight next? And also, what do you have a target date in terms of your next fight?
Honestly, that's TBA. I always get my eyes on somebody, but calculatively, you know, I want to, like I said, I want to strive to the top, to the point where though I can get all the belts. Once I get all the belts, I have consideration to even move into another weight. Why move when you haven't accomplished the true goal? True goal is to wipe out the division.
Facts.
So, you know, people be asking me, could you come in at 135? I said, of course. I've considered it a couple of times, you know, us collectively as a team. You know, like I said, this profession isn't no 40-yard dash. This is a marathon. This is a career. So you got to have a plan. And best believe we got a plan. That's the funny part about it. You know, I think a lot of people overlook that.
Overlooked having a plan, right? No, you're right. They do.
I'm going to tell you. I think they just get in there for the thrill of the sport.
Facts.
Honestly.
Facts.
And what the sport can bring.
I have a dude, I mean, when I was watching, well, I've been watching boxing forever, but I remember, to your point, they did the same thing. Well, I don't know if you probably remember him or not, Fernando Vargas. And he was the same way. Like, they rushed him. You know what I mean? Like, they rushed the whole thing without a solid plan. And to your point, I think it was all about the fame. Because they rushed him to fight, like, Oscar De La Hoya when he hasn't really kind of weathered the storm in terms of, you know, what he can do as a boxer. And in terms of getting into that environment, hasn't really faced some of the challenges and whatnot. And they rushed him in because he had the look and, you know, he was undefeated or whatnot. But I like the way your family, like, kind of, like, your team has kind of, like, progressed your career. You know what I mean? Like you said, you have a plan, you executing it, you're grading yourself out, and you're really cautious in terms of, like, you know, improvement and whatnot. I dig it, man. I think, but to your point, though, a lot of boxers are in for the fame. They want that rush aspect, but not that long-term career in terms of greatness.
Right. That's what it's all about. That's what it's really all about.
True facts. All right, so I think it's dope to have one of the best boxing minds in your corner in your brother. Like, can you explain having him in your corner, especially in that fight against Postal? I think everybody saw on Showtime on Showtime, him giving you advice and you executing that plan?
Ooh, this is where I start grading myself. You trying to get me to spill the beans.
Oh, man, I ain't trying to do, I ain't trying to have you do nothing, man. I don't want you to grade yourself a D. I know that much, but go ahead.
I'm about to tell you to cash out me some money for pulling these birds out of you.
Oh, man.
All right, well, look, as far as executing what my brother gave me, the father instructions my brother gave me, you will hear him, I believe, in round five, telling me, stop slipping to your left. Stop slipping to your left. Don't slip that way no more. The next round, I came back. I slipped that way one time. No, I say two tops. And if you look at the fight, you'll see me shake my head once I slipped that way. And I looked at him.
I saw it.
I looked at him. I was like, in my head, I'm like, I apologize. I apologize, brother. Look, we're going to get this shit right now. Oh, excuse me.
You're cool, man. Go ahead. You know? Oh, man.
But, like my father said, though, it went on for me to execute it, but a little later in the fight, round 10, I got the fight over.
Yes,
he's never been stopped. You know, I'm like, man, like, I love you, Dad, but I want those world stars. Yeah, they gotta be the finesse.
Yeah, I know, man. It was dope, though. It was dope. It definitely was. You could see it, though. Like, he would say, hey, do this. And then and you're right. In round 10, you did it. And it was a wrap. You know what I'm saying? And it's wild. You know what's so funny? Because I was, like, watching that fight. Because I went back to watch the fight. Because I was out of town. And then a friend of mine was like, I was like, you gotta watch the fight. Like, yeah, I'm gonna watch it. I have this fight. I'm gonna watch the fight. And when, you know, he was telling me, like, there was this, all this chatter about the early stoppage and whatnot. So let me peep this for myself. And I saw it, right, and I was like, what are people complaining about? Like, we talk about, like, safety in boxing. Like, dude had no chance to win the fight. He was hurt in that round, and you were going for the kill. I'm like, for real, bro? Like, what you want to happen? You know what I mean?
They want to see a knockout.
I know, but bro, I'm saying, like, we all talk about this safety thing, right? Like, say you do what you're supposed to do. You knock him out the ring. Then what's going to happen? The referee should have stopped the fight earlier.
It's a brutal sport. It's a hurt business.
Yeah.
It is a hurt business.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you got to take consideration to that, too. A lot of people lose the fact that it's almost like amateur.
Mm-hmm.
When you're boxing on the amateur level, you got parents that enroll their kids into boxing. Mm-hmm. They go to these tournaments, and next thing you know, you got some mediocre fighters, amateurs, and you got some advanced fighters. And these advanced fighters is taking it a lot more serious. They've been training a lot more longer, and they just in the same competition as you, right? These two get matched up, this advanced fighter versus this rookie who is mediocre. He hits him with a hard, clean punch like he's been practicing every day. Knocks the young kid unconscious. Everybody, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The arena probably gets silent.
Yes.
What's wrong with it? This is what you signed up for.
I agree.
That's what I mean. And that thought process goes out the window after they lose consideration to the fact that they now have no worries of advising their child for a little bit. Mm-hmm. They got their hands not too full as a parent,
yeah.
I believe. You know, but the seriousness of the sport that you just put your child in is always going to stand there. That's like a keystone. That won't go nowhere.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. That's
what comes with the sport.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just mad that those are the same people that complain about a fight should stop. That's my issue. Like, y'all the same ones, but you know what I mean? And now you try, now you spitting something different. That's why I have an issue with, like, when you listen to certain people talk about, I got an issue with Bernstein. That's a whole different conversation. That's a whole different conversation, bro. That's a whole
different brutality. Brutality.
I'm with it, man. I'm with brutality. I'm all about, you know, ending somebody. Like, in terms of, you, that's what you, like, that's what you, you train for, right? This is what you got into the sport for. I'm with it. Like, I'm with that. But I'm not with the contradiction of certain folks. That's just all I'm saying. Like, the people who cover it, the contradiction bothers me. Like, if you're going to be what I'm saying? Like, that bothers
definitely
me.
Understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can't say one thing one time, and then another time you like, oh, why'd you stop it? But you will, on another fight, you were like, you should stop the fight. I'm like, I'm not for that, man. Like, be that person. Keep that same energy throughout your covering career, whatever.
I understand. He was definitely discombobulated, though. He was about to go out.
I know. I saw
it. If they wouldn't let it go on, if they wouldn't let it continue, he would have went out.
Yes,
definitely.
Definitely. You see it.
You know, definitely.
You see it.
But I can't say, like I said, he's not no slouch. He's a good fighter. He would make any opponent an aqua fight. He would make an aqua fight for any opponent that he has in front of him.
I mean, it's out there. You see his track record. He has. You know what I mean?
I recently looked because, like I said, my father, he kept saying, I give you a B, I give you a B, I give you a B. I'm like, man, listen. I look at my fight twice, you know, and I said, okay, like, that's enough. I already graded myself. There's no need to look again. You know, so I look at a track record of the posted because I really only looked at him one time, and I was up two times. That was up against Terrence Crawford and Josh Taylor. That's it. That's it. Like I said, we connoisseurs of the art. So it don't take much to see where the person's flaws is. And that's why I was grading myself so heavily. Because we are truly connoisseurs of the sport and the art. You know, so when we come to practicing it and critiquing and executing and getting something down pat, that's what we live for. That's what we train for. Yeah. Eat, sleep, you know. Eat, sleep.
Nah, I mean, like I said, you. I mean, the whole family does it. Like, your whole family has that whole mindset, which I dig. You know what I mean? You all are finishers and great boxers, and you study your craft, which, you know, in terms of a boxer fan, I appreciate it. Like, you guys definitely, you know, study your craft, and you do good work in the ring. Hey, before I let you go, Antoine, and I appreciate you for being on, is there anything you want to add, or, you know, you want to drop your social media, do whatever. The floor is yours, my man.
Definitely. Got a clothing business about to come out.
Okay.
I'm actually about to open up a couple of SBAs, you know, but I gotta take my time. My social media, that's Gary A. Russell all together on Instagram. I don't have no Twitter. I have Facebook. I don't know if y'all do that. That's Polo Twan if y'all do Facebook. But all of these things that I'm giving y'all as far as my information, y'all will hear from me personally. I just keep me in high faith, man. Look, superstars. Everybody that I deal with, I want y'all to know that we superstars. You part of the superstar group.
Oh, man, you my guy, man. I'm about to shed a tear, man. Dang, that's what I'm talking about.
You gotta walk like that.
You know what I'm about to do? Hey, man, I'm about to stunt. You got me already, my man. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, man. That's why you my guy, man. I ain't gonna lie, that's why you my guy. You the man.
Really, man. I appreciate you, man.
You know I appreciate you. Hey, man, stay blessed. Again, thanks for being on, my man.
You know it.
All right, man, take care.
Peace.
Again, like, y'all know what I meant to mean. That is the future. That is a future welterweight champ, man. That's the dude right there. That's Gary Antoine Russell. You ain't check out his fight. Dude is coming up, man. I'm telling you, Ray, Will, and I, we've been saying it for a while. Like, that dude is about to create damage. Seriously, man. But anyway, Norfolk State takes on Baylor in the NCAA tournament. Norfolk State coach Robert Jones will jump on the show after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Saint for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Straight out of ATL. Got young one chopping that thing, baby. Swiss beats, full surface. Come on.
Party in the hood, I might just toss. Underground, downtown, I might just toss. Give me the key to the city, I'ma lock this. They ain't gon' take me alive, and you can bet that. Hit them where the chest at, hit them where the neck at. Show me where the rest at. They in the same building, living like a mess pack. 4 miles from where the deck at. Bet that, shout it, you and me gon' ride over to the other side. It's how these motherfuckers die. First make a prank call and get the kids out the house. Ain't tryna get no kids, but I'ma turn it lights out. Then I'm kicking her out. I spit game to your wife, then we robbing your house. Not that way that we gripping the grain. If you got it and I want it, I ain't calling your name. Just lay it down, boy, like I'm balling. See, just get your chest to the lap.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. With myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T are out, and we are part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com.
Right now, we have Norfolk State University's men's basketball coach, MEAC Coach of the Year, and winner of the MEAC Conference and Tournament Coach Robert Jones on the line. What's going on, Coach?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. So last weekend, you went back-to-back win the MEAC Tournament. How'd you guys get it done?
Just locking in and just, you know, playing some defense, making a few shots, I guess. You know, we're able to get through that gauntlet, you know. MEAC tournament was probably the toughest. MEAC conference, I should say, was probably the toughest it's been in a while. It's been a lot of good teams. Some of the bottom teams became good teams. So, yeah. And some of a lot of good teams stayed good teams. So, it was a tough year.
You're definitely surprising that Coppin made it all the way to the finals to play you all.
Yeah, see, I wasn't so surprised. I think they got talent. I just think that, you know, they just didn't have it together. You know, there's a lot of things like going on over there, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just think that they ended up putting it together for two good games and was able to make a run. But I think that we saw that they had talent. We weren't, like, super surprised that they made it to the finals. I think a lot of people see the seventh seed. They don't really look at the talent that they have and things like that. And like I said, they just got, like, a lot going on over there, it looks like, you know, from the outside.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right, so the NCAA tournament starts this week. You all play the number one seed in the East in Baylor Thursday at 2 p.m. last week. We talked about, you know, you all deserving to me a 14 or 15 seed, but the committee gave you the 16th seed in the East. What were your thoughts when you saw the brackets?
Well, as we started checking, like, a lot of the bracketology stuff was getting close to, you know, Selection Sunday, it seemed like all the bracketology started to put us at 16. Which you know, I don't think is very fair. You know, mm-hmm. I think that with 24-6, you know, yeah, we didn't have like any signature wins.
Yeah.
But the problem the committee always also doesn't see is that a lot of those teams that were in the tournament, we've asked to play, and they declined because they, you know, they don't want to play. You know, they mm-hmm. you know, whether they worry about losing or whatever the case is. So we've tried to get a lot of those teams out in the tournament, and then so we play mm-hmm. who we can play. And, you know, like I said, I use examples like UNC Wilmington that we beat. And they were in top of the CAA conference for a long time. And then the CAA team that got in got a 15 seed. And then, you know, I know the Big South team that got in got a 14 seed. And you know, they did a great job over there, a great job. But at the same time, it was very comparable conferences that, you know, got in. And then Yale Yale got in too that wasn't supposed to get in. Mm-hmm. They got in last minute. They beat Princeton, which I know was the favorite in that situation. And they got a 14 seed, I think. So, mm-hmm. you know, somebody got to make it make sense to us a little bit. But once we got over the initial anguish and disappointment, because it's just not, you know, these kids deserve it. I don't think people sitting in that room realize how hard it is to win 24 games. Like that's 80% of your games, you know, and this is the Division One level, you know, it's like that's extremely hard to do. And maybe people who sit in that room don't understand that or whatever the case is. But they gave us 16 and they go from there. I know a lot of people are like saying, well, you know, because, you know, a lot of HBCUs are usually in the first four games and stuff like that. And really, honestly, the first four isn't that bad to me.
Yeah, you said that last week. Yeah.
It's not that bad to me, man. But it's like, you know, like I said last week, I said that if you give me a 16, then give me the first four.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
If you're going to do us like that, then just give us the first four. People think that it's like a reward if you're not in the first four. And it's really not a reward if you're not in the first four. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, okay, so my reward is Baylor. All right, thank you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, why not get Wright State, then Baylor? You know? Mm-hmm. That's a reward, you know, a two-for-one situation. Or you know, I forgot it was in the first four, maybe Texas Southern or Texas Corpus Christi. Or
it's a Corpus Christi, yeah.
Uh-huh. You know, like, why not have them and Baylor? You know, that's a reward. That's not a reward. So, you know, but, hey, we got over that. Like I said, I got over that. I'll be honest with you, too. Uh-huh. We had a good day of practice today, and we're ready to rock and roll. We will be ready to rock and roll on Thursday.
Oh, I definitely anticipate that. But I want to get to that point about the MEAC. I just feel like for me, because I've watched and I've seen multiple MEAC teams this season, and to me, a lot of teams have competed with some of these big schools. I know like the University of Maryland Eastern Shore competed with UConn at UConn, play a tough game at UConn. You had Howard playing Notre Dame, and they played them tough. You know, you all in terms of the season dominance, I just feel like to me, the MEAC, it's that whole notion that the MEAC is a weaker conference has to stop. I mean, to me, it's like it's been stronger. It's actually stronger than multiple, like a lot of conferences, to be honest with you. And like you said, this is a thing that we've seen throughout the history of college basketball. These good teams don't want to play some of these schools. You know what I mean? Because they're scared of an upset or whatever. So it's just like, to me, it's hard to, I would like the committee to kind of get away from that thought process of the MEAC being like this lower tier conference. Look at it for what it was this season, and then tell me a team that went back to back, you know, went back to back, dominated the conference this season, and they were in the tournament last year. Why would you not reward them higher than the 16th seed?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. It's like 16 is like a death sentence. It's like, because, you know, it's only been 1-16 to win. You know, 15 obviously is a, you know, a tough seed too, but at the same time, a lot of 15s, including us back in 2012, have won a game. You know, and 14 has to get lower and lower. Then, of course, the odds go up higher and higher. I just think, you know, you reward a team like that to try to give us a chance to make something happen. And then once again, you know, to all the Spartan fans and stuff like that out there, we're not conceding by any means. You know, we're going up there to win a basketball game. We're just talking about
fairness.
Yeah, how we felt like we shouldn't be in this. You know, that's all. Yeah. That's all this topic of conversation is. It's not about, you know, just get conceding or anything like that. We're going to be ready to play. And we're going to be ready to pull upset.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think anybody should think from this conversation, think that you're conceding. I think that there's an interest of fairness. That's all. Like, if anything, you could be a one seed, right, and complain. You could be a two seed and complain about not being a one seed. You know what I mean? So it's all about fairness. But for me, I've coached boys and girls for like years and whatnot. So my thought process, when I felt like my squad was being disrespected, you know, I would use it for my squad. Are you using that for your squad in terms of like motivation? Say, you know what? They don't believe in me, but you know what? We're going to make Baylor believe in this.
Yeah, I mean, we use that motivation. I mean, we always kind of play with I coach with a chip on my shoulder. No matter how much success I have, I always coach with a chip on my shoulder. I always want to prove that I'm the best, you know, and I think that I tell the guys to do the same thing, prove that they did their best. You know, like, okay, they put us here. All right, cool. We got to show that, you know, why we shouldn't be here, you know, and things like that. You know, so we got to go out there and compete hard, and we haven't competed. I mean, Baylor is a quality program. I'm not taking anything away from Baylor. This is, you know, Baylor's a, you know, real deal program, you know, and we've played Baylor twice, you know, early in my career, one as an assistant and one as an early head coach. Mm-hmm. And we didn't fare very well against them. But I think the program has changed now. I think the players have changed. I've changed as a coach, and I think that we'll be ready to go. You know, it's still a tall task. Like I said, they're the defending national champions for a reason, but at the same time, I just feel like we shouldn't be even playing.
Of course, no, I get you. No, I'm with you, my man. I'm with you, and it's just no one thought that UMBC was going to beat Virginia. You know what I mean? So it is like anything that happened, and today, and to me. And Ray and I, who's not able to be on the show, we always talk about like the parity in college basketball is so much different than what it was back in the day. Like there's so much more parity in college basketball. Like these kids in smaller schools are able to compete with some of these so-called big major schools. All right. So obviously you went to the tournament last year. How will this experience of being in tournament last year help you for Thursday?
I think, the preparation, you know how to kind of like prepare for the games and things like that. That'll be the same. I think what was a little different was like today, we had our first practice back and stuff. And it was a little weird at first because it's like you kind of practice all year to win that championship, in which we did. Uh-huh. And then of course the celebration, we had a day off yesterday, it was Selection Sunday and all that stuff like that. And now it's like, okay, back to work, let's go to for another goal. So last year we didn't have that. Last year we won the championship at one of the same thing, 1 o'clock game. Mm-hmm. At 7 o'clock, we was already on our way to Indianapolis.
Ooh, okay.
So it was like almost like a constant work. It wasn't just like a stoppage anywhere. So this was a little different that I had to get used to as a coach, NCAA tournament coach, to be prepared for. So that was probably the only difference. But other than that, preparation is gonna be preparation, and we're gonna be ready to. You'll be ready to go.
What was your preference last year or this year? What's your preference?
I think that's a good question. I mean, I think that I don't know yet. Let me answer that.
I understand. I know where you're coming from. I know. I get it. No, I get it.
I think that I will. I'm happy for the guys because they're going to be able to experience NCAA tournament the right way.
Yeah.
When we went last year, like the bubble was crazy. I mean, the bubble was. You was really confined to your room. It was crazy in the bubble. But it was, when we went in 2012, when I was there, they're going to experience that. They're going to experience the fanfare. They're going to experience the tens of, 10,000 people in the arena. They're going to experience the, people actually cheering for the underdog and stuff like that. They're going to experience all that stuff, especially if you keep it close. If you keep it close, the whole crowd flips for you, because when we beat Missouri, we came in there with about 50 fans. I mean, let's face it, nobody was traveling to Omaha. At least for us, right? Mm-hmm. But by the time we left, we had 15,000 fans, because it's like everybody wants to see the Cinderella. So if we can keep it close, the momentum will shift and the fan support will shift to our side.
Well, we all know once you keep it close, the so-called favorite teams, they get tight. They get tight. all right. So for you, going into this big game, who will you need to lean on to shock the world?
I mean, the guys I've been producing all year, it ain't gonna be, there's no secret. I mean, we've been blessed to have a few different options, but that could do some things for us. But the guys we've been producing all year, we're gonna count on them to produce. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be like no one has to go get 30 or 40 or anything like that. If they do, they do. But it just has to be play within yourself, play within the game, and don't let the moment get past you.
Yeah. So that would be the message you give to your ball club, right? Like, don't try to oversee what you do. Just let the game flow, play your game, and don't worry about trying to make the greatest play. Just worry about doing what's within the system.
Yeah, without question, because, I mean, this is the first time in, 3 months, maybe, that we're not going to be the favorite.
Yeah.
We can almost breathe a little relax a little bit, because we can go back into that hunted mode. The hunter mode instead of hunted all the time. Cause we've been hunted for 3 months, maybe even longer than that, honestly. Mm-hmm. But, so now we can kind of flip our mental a little bit. Is that like, it's really like no pressure on us. I mean, at all. Cause if we lose, people are going to expect us to lose. If we win, people shout that we win. There's going to be a ton of fanfare behind it. So we're really right now in a win-win situation for Nova State's basketball. So it's like all the pressure's on Baylor. They're the defending national champs. They're the number one seed. They got to play the 16th seed. Like you said, only one 16th seed ever won. I'm sure that's in the back of their head because you don't want to be the second one to let it happen. So and they got all the pressure. You know, like we could come in there and just play basketball. Just relax, play basketball.
Man, I'm hoping y'all start fast because I want to see them. I want to see them put them Baylor boys shook. I hope we start fast. I just know how. I mean, we watched. I mean, some of us. I mean, all of us. A lot of us into college basketball. We watched the tournament for years, and we know like once you jump on a squad fast, especially if they're like the favorites. Like we see people pressing. We see these kids pressing. So I would love, you know, for you all to start fast, man. And man, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate you, Coach. Before I let you go, is there anything you would like to add?
No, just, you know, hopefully we, you know, if everybody, I'm not sure when the show's coming out, but you know, hopefully we can have a big attendance in Dallas, Fort Worth. And if not, you know, please support us at home and keep us in your prayers and blessings.
Will do. All right. Thank you, Coach. Appreciate you, my man.
All right, man.
As you can tell, that was a recorded interview with Coach Robert Jones. Hey, good luck to Norfolk State. You know, I actually have my sister in law went to Norfolk State, so I'm gonna root for her squad. All right, so but she's a dope interview. I want them to kind of, you know, do some special things. And also, Team MEAC, man, we about the MEAC HBCUs. So we need to step up. We got to upset. We got to shock the world. And I think we can actually do that. All right, the Washington Commanders have a new QB, and they locked up their offensive coordinator, Scott Turner, for multiple years. Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus Commanders reporter Donna Hopkins will join me after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Saint for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Let's go! Let's go! Yeah! Legend of the Eastside Boys. Okay. Pastor Troy. Yeah! We represent for everybody. Everybody. All the real in America. Where you at? Or where we come from? We represent for y'all. We represent for G.A.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Ole, Ray Jeezy, and the homie Will T are out, and we are part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. All right, right now, I have Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus Washington Commanders reporter, Donna Hopkins, on the line. What's good, Donna?
Hey, Wally, you know what? It is so great to be back with you, but don't make me misbehave tonight.
Well, what happened?
Conversation that we're going to have.
You're gonna misbehave because down in one thing about you, look, you hold no punches. Like you one of the hardcore folks out here. Some people are a little soft, but you're not one of them. So I don't want you to come on this show and not be Donna.
Oh, I'm going to tell the truth. You can believe that.
I know that's right.
No punches held back.
That's what I want that Donna. I want the Donna that wants all the smoke. That's the Donna I want. All right, here we go. All right. The Commanders traded the Colts. Traded the Colts for quarterback Carson Wentz. Washington traded away the 2022 third round pick and next year's third rounder that could convert to a second rounder based on incentives. The two teams switched 2022 second round draft picks. What was your thought on the deal when you heard it once you heard it go down?
Here we go again. What in the world is going on? That's what I said. I said, is this a repeat of the last year when they got Ron? And you know what I said from day one with Ron is why did they pick him? Did they not have, not that I didn't like him as a person, but I thought that why did you bring in run when it was so many other options out there, and he was not going to move the needle forward enough for this team to get into the playoffs or to move up in the division. So I see the same thing. When they said Carson Wentz, I said, you got to be kidding me, all over again. And you get a quarterback again that you put a Band-Aid effect on a wound that you don't want to heal. How many times have this situation with the quarterback not have, you know, it's almost like they can't get this right. And so they can't get out of their own way with the quarterback situation. So it was 16, I think, veteran quarterbacks out there that was going to be available. And of course, everybody's looking at the Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. They were Watson. You know, they were looking at big ticket players. But those are the guys are going to move you forward as far as what you're trying to do in getting back on as a winner. Carson Wentz to me is again a Band-Aid effect of putting it over a wound. Where is this guy going to be your quarterback of the future? No, I don't think so. And he, I mean, when has he won, really? I think it was 1 year that he's won, and he's been injured for the most part. The Colts were 9-8. Not all his fault, but he was leading the charge. But I don't think that they remedied the problem in the quarterback position. This is a quarterback. This is a situation in Washington, Wally, that they had to get right.
Yeah.
They needed to get right. Whether it was going into the draft, whether it was trying to get one of these, you know, guys that could push you forward, they still did not answer the bell when it comes to quarterback.
You know, I mean, I actually like Carson Wentz, but it's different. I guess because for me, I'm different from everybody else in this aspect, is that it can't get any worse than Taylor Heineke. I'm actually on this. I'm like, you had Taylor Heineke, so anything better, any quarterback you're going to get that had success is better than Taylor Heineke. Because of his limitations, right? Because I feel like having, like, for instance, everybody watched the Cowboys games where, you know, everybody was touting how Trayvon Diggs was strapping up Scary Terry. And they were just underthrowing footballs. You won't get that situation with Carson Wentz. And he's had success, right? He's had some success in this league with the Eagles. He had an MVP season before he got hurt with the Eagles. But you're right, he doesn't stay healthy. It's hard because for me, if Carson Wentz was and we're gonna get to it later, but if Carson Wentz say he went to the Rams, say he didn't have like the Rams situation before there was Matthew Stafford, say he went to the Rams or something like that, he would be okay. Like, you know what I mean? Because I think that situation would be better conducive for Carson Wentz to be successful.
Wally, I'm not letting you get away with this.
You know what I'm doing?
No way, because this is the thing. You said, okay, so see, this is the thing that people can't look at when they're trying to build a successful team.
Yeah.
Is they can't go in with the mentality of, oh, he's better than Taylor Heineke.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, you can't build a team and you can't put a quarterback on a team that has been broken for years at this position. And you say, well, he's better than what we have. That doesn't work because will he be able to carry you to the promised land?
Well,
I don't think
I actually have an issue. I see, this is the thing. All right. So as you know, there's levels to quarterback play. You've covered this team. You've been covering football forever. So you know that there's levels to quarterback play. So there are certain quarterbacks that, regardless of the environment, to what you're talking about, Don, and I agree with you, that will carry your ball club through whatever. Like, there's certain quarterbacks that can do it. Like, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers. Russell Wilson, to a certain extent, I think things still have to be a certain way for Russell Wilson to carry you throughout everything. But Russell Wilson, we'll put him in that list. Obviously, you know, the elite, the Tom Brady's of the world. We can look at all the quarterbacks at the AFC, them young killers at the AFC, all those quarterbacks, right? The quarterbacks that are available that was on the market, and the quarterbacks that were available on the market that you didn't have to trade for, all of those quarterbacks weren't the ones that would carry your ball club in December when you need them to ball out, right? They would need to have a conducive environment for them to win football games. So my question to you is that, like, one, which quarterback, say you couldn't get Russ, you couldn't get Aaron Rodgers. Those are the two quarterbacks that everybody was was talking about.
I wanted Watson. I wanted Watson.
Okay, so I wanted Watson
year.
Too. I wanted Watson
him
too.
The year before.
Okay, I'm with you, Donna. I'm not going to. I'm with you. I'm with you. I wanted Watson
because
too.
Because this is a young guy. If he hadn't been in trouble, I mean, if he hadn't had the dark cloud over his head for the last season or so, then this is a guy that did not want to be in Houston.
I agree, Donna.
And this is a young guy. This is a playmaker. This is a guy that can make your team better. Watson wasn't going to come here. It's funny that Washington signs Wentz and then all the charges is dropped as far as Watson go. But would that have mattered? Would he have come here? And that's the thing about this is the thing that upsets me about them signing Carson Wentz. Yeah. I don't think he's the right fit here still because you're talking about having to have so many pieces around him to make this go. And then they let go J.D. McKissic. Let's not even get on that one.
There's another one. Donna, I agree.
Let's go back to Wentz. You mortgage your team. You had $33 million in the salary cap. And you gave him a $28 million. He's not a $28 million. I'm not mad at him about getting it, but he's not $28 million dollar quarterback.
This is the problem, Donna.
Type of money.
See, this is the problem. This is my issue. So what I had was in the text chain, and I told folks, I'm not mad at the trade, but I'm going to tell you what I'm mad at the trade. I'm gonna tell you what I'm mad for. This team doesn't know how to trade. This is what bothers me. This team does not know how to trade. And this is what I question Rivera and that he has too much power. You traded, this is what happened. The Colts were going to cut him eventually. No one was going to trade for Carson Wentz. He's going to get cut eventually. So you traded for him, but you took all the money. Like, you took in all the money. Why couldn't you get the Colts to pay off most of that? Like, why, or half of it? You decided to take on the whole contract. There's many deals when somebody's trying to get rid of a quarterback. What do? They work a deal where they take half of it.
They work
half of the money, or they'll pay damn near all of it. So this situation, for some strange reason, and Carson Wentz, like you said, everything is bargaining. Carson Wentz stats last year, they look good. But you're going to remember the last two games where he cost them the playoffs, right? Because he played horrible those last two games. So that's what you're going to remember. But throughout the totality of the season, he had a good season. But the last two games, you're going to remember. All right, in terms of bargaining, like you're negotiating. Those last two games, everybody remembers. Why would you pay the whole contract out, $28 million, knowing your salary cap situation, right? If you want to make your team better throughout, why would you not have the Colts pay at least half of it?
Well, not only that, Wally, when you look at the Colts and you look at who was on that roster, they had a solid running game. They had wide receivers.
They didn't have wide receivers. They had one. See, that was the issue. See, that's the thing, Donna. They didn't have wide receivers. They had the great running back.
But they had a
running
game.
Oh, my God.
Game.
That dude was a dog. Jonathan Taylor's a dog. I love Jonathan Taylor.
And guess what? Well, how do you win games? You start with the running game. But again, this team, when you look at other teams, when you look at other teams that are winning and they are putting together pieces, look at all the other teams across the NFL right now and the players that they have put in place to make their teams better. Washington has not put in place a team that can be better than last year because they let go of J.D. McKissic, which was a workhorse. And he goes to the Bills. You let go Tim Settles, which is a young guy, again, who was a playmaker. And Sheriff, we knew he wasn't going to come back or be back signed with this team. But my question, again, is who have you bought in to replace those players? And the fact that you got Terry McLaurin that you still have to sign or else he's going to be gone because you mortgage the team, getting a quarterback that you pay $28 million. That's not worth that $28 million, and he's got to prove me wrong, but I'm sticking to what I said last year when they got Ryan, is that until I see a quarterback that can come in here and be the future, and let's not talk about just Carson Wentz on the field, but it's been some incidents as a teammate, a leader, and all of that. So the quarterback position with a young team like Washington, with a lot of young players on the offensive side, and everybody questions who is the leaders on this Washington Commanders team, and nobody can really come up to say, oh, yeah, is this one John Allen, you call out him. But on the offensive side of the ball, it's got to be the quarterback. Is Carson Wentz that person? I question that. And again, I don't understand those picks because other teams that are successful, and I went over this in my mind when they were put when I heard the news that Carson Wentz was going to be signed by Washington, I was like, here we go again. Can we get that position right? Because to me, he's not that quarterback that you look to move, you know, move this team forward in the future. Yeah. Because you let go some of the key pieces, you still got to solidify the offensive line a little bit more. Now you got to get somebody to replace a J.D. McKissick, because the running game, well, the running game was okay. It wasn't like, oh man, we got the Colts running back, we got Tennessee's running back, we got, you know, some of those workhorses that, you know, okay, that's a back right there. So I don't see where Washington has gotten better, or they brought in other players, because some of the high ticket players, they can't bring them in now because they don't have the money.
They got the money
because they put it all together for this guy.
Yeah, I agree. That's why I said some people have too much power. But it is, I mean, I'm gonna get into that. I think we're agreed somewhere, but I think I have my other reason why it won't work. It's close though. It's very close to what you're talking about. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Empire Media at AmpireMedia.com. I'm chatting with Donna Hopkins from Tony McGee's Pro Football Plus. All right, so the same, like almost not too long after that, it was reported offensive coordinator Scott Turner received a multi-year extension. Do you think he deserves a multi-year extension all out of the body of work?
Well, no, I don't think nobody as far as
the
coaching
offense,
staff
right?
should be getting anything
exactly.
yet, because Scott Turner is still in, to me, developing as offensive coordinator. Uh-huh. Because if you look over his record since he's been here in Washington, uh-huh. even before he got here in Washington, which his first go as offensive coordinator was here in Washington. Uh-huh. So when you look at the course of the seasons, the last couple of seasons, you look at his production as an offensive coordinator, then you question some of his decisions. And I don't think he's at that point where you say, this is a new coordinator for the most part mm-hmm. that you can offer that big ticket right now. Maybe in a couple of years yeah. after I see him. And I don't want to hear about he didn't have a quarterback. I don't want to hear about all those things, because as an offensive coordinator, if you are seasoned and if you're good, not saying that he's not
good,
you
yeah.
know, good in some sense, he has not gotten to that point where you could say, well, wow, he's really rocked this offense and he's made this offense so much better.
Exactly.
This offense is not much better in these last couple of years. And I see that he's still developing as an offensive coordinator. So why would you throw that bone out as far as to give him, when I don't think that nobody deserves that yet, because this team has not gone anywhere. This team got into the playoffs the year before, but that was
with a
losing record, yeah. really. And then this year, you know, I thought that they took a step back. So nobody deserves to have that ink sign on that paper yet. They have not done enough mm-hmm. to deserve that yet. Not saying that he won't be a great offensive coordinator on down the line. He just hasn't gotten to that point yet that you say, let me sign, extension, a multi-million dollar extension. I just think that that's, to me, it's just a crazy move.
This is where I'm going to get in trouble, not you. All right, so to what you what you're talking about, which I totally agree with you. Like, he doesn't deserve the extension. And this is why I agree with you. And I hate this when people say he doesn't have a quarterback, he doesn't have this, that, and the other, right? He doesn't have a quarterback, but he has Scary Terry, he has Antonio Gibson, he has threats, right? He has weapons. He may not have the quarterback, but he has weapons, right? So you mentioned the Colts, right? Now, regardless of what folks think about Carson Wentz and whatever, but they leaned on that running back. They leaned on him. That's why they just leaned on that running back, knowing that they actually limited Carson Wentz throwing a lot because Jonathan Taylor is more effective. He's more productive. He's the better player. The Washington football team, the Washington Commanders, I want to keep saying football team. The Washington Commanders last season.
You didn't say Washington football team.
I know, right?
The Washington football team.
I know, it hurts. I know, I can say it. Thank you, Donna. Thank you. Their best thing going on, especially in that winning streak, was running the football, right? If they had done that initially, the record probably could have been better. But Scott Turner decided to do what? He's the offensive-minded coach, right? He decided to throw the football a lot. He liked throwing the football. That's what he liked to do. But You have a running back who went over 1,000 yards. Now, granted, he had a lot of fumbling issues, but the running game was still more effective. People wanted to see Jared Patterson touch the ball a bit more in the running game. J.B. McKissick, you could have had a three-headed monster. But you chose to throw the football. You chose to throw the football with a limited throwing quarterback. But you chose that. That is, again, the offensive coordinator's responsibility. That he does, he designs the plays, he calls the plays. That's what he does. So, to me, as just as an individual watching a play caller, he's not an elite play caller. Like you said, Donna, he's still relatively young, so maybe he's going to get better. But right now, in the moment, he's the unknown. So what shows you that he deserves to be, I mean, deserves to get an extension? And that plays into what I'm talking about with Carson Wentz. To your point, and what I kind of agree with you, is not that I think Carson Wentz can't be successful here. I don't like the marriage. I don't like the marriage with Carson Wentz and Scott Turner.
It's a divorce right off the bat.
Yeah, it's not a good marriage. It's like you're asking him. Now, granted, everyone's going to say, well, he has a quarterback who has an arm, so it should work. I'm like, that's not necessarily the truth. Again, when Carson Wentz started to struggle in with the Colts, Frank Wright was like, yeah, we got to run the ball more with Jonathan Taylor. Like, yeah, Jonathan Taylor's one of the best running backs, but we got to run even more. Like, he did that. We have to run even more. So he did that. He limited Carson Wentz throwing the ball, play action. It worked for him. Carson Wentz put up better stats. Eventually got kind of comfortable until the last two games of the season. In this situation, can you say that from the body of work, have you seen with a Scott Turner, if Carson Wentz gets to that spell when he is struggling, would Scott Turner be like, you know what, let's lean on Antonio Gibson. Let's lean on whoever the backup running back is, you know, trying to be a running football team. Will he do that? I don't know.
But, Wally, the dynamics is not the same as far as you got a Colts running back, Jonathan Taylor, and then you got Washington's. Gibson not taking anything from him and whatever, but yeah. The two are totally different.
No, I agree.
So you're more comfortable putting the ball in Taylor's hands.
Oh, wow.
And you're more comfortable taking the ball out of Wentz's hands because he doesn't have to basically throw the ball. But then you get with Washington, the dynamics of the team is totally different.
Oh, I agree.
When you look at with both teams. So if a Wentz comes here, will he be successful? This is a quarterback to me that has never proven out of the gates. He was a top draft pick.
Yeah.
They were projecting him to be this super quarterback. You know, this is the guy, and he got injured.
That's what messed him up.
Has never really stepped up to be that quarterback that everybody projected him to be. Can he still be that quarterback? A lot of question marks to be answered there. Uh-huh. I don't know if he could be there. He hasn't shown that yet, that he's gotten back to what they have projected him to be when he got drafted, number one draft pick.
Uh-huh.
So my question again is, when you come to Washington, the setup is totally different. You
yes,
got a young
is.
Offensive coordinator. You got running backs is not the same as what the Colts had.
Sure.
You got wide receivers, but you really haven't solidified that yet because you had people hurt. The wide receivers that you brought in here that you're saying that we're going to be able to help Terry and whatever, that wasn't the case.
It didn't work out.
So again, I don't think that they need a big time receiver to go along with Terry Steele to be able to make Carson a little more comfortable. But my other thing is, who do you draft now? And not only that, you gave up too many draft picks and you gave up too much money. That's the frustrating part.
The money part bothers me more than the draft.
Yeah,
picks.
But even the draft picks, those draft picks for Washington, a team that's still trying to build this team for the future, is that you can't afford to give up number two draft pick,
yeah.
Second round, third round draft picks. You can't afford to do that when you're trying to build a team and then you're losing quality players to other teams. And again, I haven't seen you replace those players with anybody yet that can make them better than what they had when they lost J.D. McKissick, when they lost Settles, when they lost Sheriff. Who have you replaced in that category right there? And then for the draft, are you going to go after a wide receiver? You need a linebacker. You need so many pieces yet. And you're not going to have the money because of what you did. I know that they're going to have money from the sheriff. I know they're going to have money from Landon Collins.
No
but
problem.
that's feel is not enough to sign the players that they need to make this team better. It's going to be interesting this year, you know, as far as how they put pieces together for a team that they said got better last year. I don't think it got better last year.
They didn't get better last year. That's a lie. They didn't get better last year. It went backwards. Whoever said that, they're just spitting some lies. I'm sorry. I was going to say something. They're spitting some real lies. They went backwards last year. Anybody who watched that scene, they went backwards last year. And if you're doing that, you're just trying to – you're playing a media game. Like, you – if you're keeping it 100, like, they were worse last year. They were.
Well, they said during the combines that they were going to, you know, that quarterback position was key for them.
Yeah.
And they were courting, yeah, I guess, different people. I don't know who the different people are. They were courting to try to bring here. But again, there's too many people out there that this is what you got. And that you thought that Carson Wentz could come in here and be better.
He could
to
be
move
done.
This team forward.
I don't have an issue with Carson. I think I have more issues with Scott Turner.
I still think that it's Carson Wentz too, because he has not to me.
No, I agree with you. I know what you're saying.
Proven that he's that elite quarterback.
He's not elite. He's not elite.
When I say take me to the promised land, haven't seen a quarterback here in Washington that has been on this roster for forever, for a long time, that you could say that this team is moving in the right direction quarterback-wise. Wilson, let me tell you this.
Yeah.
Denver is going to be better, and Wilson is getting other players on that team to bring along to make that team better.
Yeah, they got
Aaron Rodgers, you know, is going to stay in Green Bay. And then you got the Tom Brady that don't want to ever retire.
He wants too much attention. He wants attention.
That he's coming back. But guess what? He, at 40-some years old or whatever, he's still a quarterback can win for
He a problem.
So again, Washington, who else did you court during this process?
I'm about to see, Donna, I'm gonna tell you this, Donna. This is
quarterback wise.
This is what I'm gonna tell you, Donna. I'm gonna be honest with you. This is why, like, all right, to your point, when you mentioned those guys, those dudes can win pretty much in any situation. Like, I always say, like, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, they can win. Like, they can win with pretty much anything. Aaron Rodgers only has Adams. Other than that, his receiving core is garbage. He just makes them dudes look good. Tom Brady is Tom Brady. We already know. Like, that's the GOAT in terms of quarterback play. But also, when you don't have that level tier, like, all right, for instance, Matthew Stafford was in Detroit, didn't do any, like, couldn't get over it. He was in Detroit, which was a bad situation. But he couldn't even get to the postseason. You put him with a good coach, then everything changes, right? Sometimes it's not like it's obviously you want that quarterback who's that dude. And if you're blessed to have a Patrick Mahomes, like you mentioned Watson. To me, Watson's that kind of guy. If you have that kind of guy, you can – he gives you hope for everything. To your point, yes, I'm with you. Like, that player can do whatever you need.
Does Carson Wentz give you hope?
No, but I'm going to tell you – no, he doesn't. I'm going to tell you what he does it, but I'm going to tell you why he doesn't give me hope. Because if Carson Wentz was in a situation – so it's going to be – it's going to sound like an indictment on coaching, right? This is going to sound bad. All right, we've seen Coach Gibbs, right? We've seen greatness. Is Ron greatness? Is Scott Turner greatness? They're – you know, people like the culture change, but are they great? Are they good enough to win with a Carson Wentz? We can flip the discussion. Are they good enough because
they made
the trade?
We'll find that out in a few months.
I'm about to say, that's what I want to say.
But let me just say this. If Carson Wentz ends up working out and if he ends up helping this team, I will zip it up. I will say, you know what? I was wrong here.
Yeah.
He ended up, you know, proving me wrong. Uh-huh. But I don't think that's going to happen.
No, Don, I get what you're saying because I always feel like I know what you're saying, and I agree with you. We're talking about elite quarterbacks. Carson Wentz isn't the quarterback that I think that could take the team to the promised land. I totally agree with you. But my argument to that, like my thought process to that is Carson Wentz is still better than certain, like a lot of the quarterbacks that Washington has. That's not a has had in the past.
Wally, that doesn't give me
I know. And that's why I'm agreeing with you, Don. I agree with you. I'm not even making that as part of my – argument. What I'm saying is that I've seen greatness. You've seen greatness. Like, I've seen greatness in coaching, and I've seen what great coaches can do with not having the elite quarterback. Like, I've seen it. Like, you can't tell me that. Like, I've seen it. I've seen it in early when I as a young kid with this organization. I even seen it with when people when before Tom Brady was great with Bill Belichick and he got that Super Bowl when they beat the Rams. I saw that with Bill Belichick. Like, I've seen that with other. We saw that with the Baltimore Ravens with Trent Dilfer. Like, we've seen coaches who can win with lesser quarterback play. We've seen it.
Well,
it's
no,
this
well,
organization. Yeah, go ahead.
You're right, but all the pieces have to be put together.
I agree. Like, I totally agree.
If you don't have a solid quarterback and some of the other pieces are missing, mm-hmm. then you don't have room for much error.
Agreed.
That means that the coaching has to be on point, right, from the offensive coordinator, yes, defensive coordinator, all the players and whatever. Uh-huh. But the thing that I look at in Washington is they haven't put enough pieces together.
Agreed.
For it to be even at the point where they may not have all the talent and whatever, but if they had key pieces in that equation put together, they would be so much better. But again, I still think that if you get a quarterback in here, that it, I mean, this is something we've been talking about probably the last couple of years,
yeah,
is, you know, that the picks of quarterbacks have not been good.
Not at all.
And if they could, and we said this during last season, that the most crucial position leading into 2022 will be that quarterback position and who they're going to bring in here. So again, I look at it like, huh? You know, when I saw it, like, huh? Really? I said that again. I was like, are you kidding me? I wanted to just kind of like, I know the fans was like, I mean, some of the fans think that maybe it's a good move and whatever, but most probably think that, can we get this position right? Can we get this, you know, and like I said, it's not just that they got Carson Wentz. It's what they had to give up and the amount of money that they had to give him to get him here. And to your point, you could have waited because the Colts was probably going to cut him or try to work a deal where you didn't have to give up so much to get him. And look at Watson. Basically, now since everything has been dropped on him, is that now teams are going to be aggressive. Where is he going to end up? Carolina?
Should be in Washington.
Saints?
Should have been in Washington. I would have took the L for him. I told you this, Don.
I told you
I would have took him early, even with all the bad press. I was the one. I said that early. I said,
you know what? You couldn't have done that because you can't get a quarterback that you can't put on the field.
Hey, look. It's better than what. It still would be better than what they've been putting on the field. I don't care. I would take that.
But he wasn't gonna be on the field.
That's still better than what they was doing with quarterback. I don't even care. He's not on the field. I would have waited for him. I would have been all right.
Yeah.
Time. All right. Well, okay. Week what? 2022. Oh, he here now? Okay. Good. 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 Okay. Good. I'm good now. I'm happy now. Hey, Donna. All right. It was dope. We got to end this show. But Donna, before I let you go, let our listeners know how they can catch your show. You know, your Masson show, and also how they can hit you up on social media.
Yeah, we're going to probably be doing a draft show come April. Uh-huh. So they Mid-Atlantic Sportsnet, it'll be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then Tony McGee and myself are starting a podcast.
Oh, yes.
Month also, it's called In a Minute. And okay, you know it's going to be entertaining with Tony. Yeah. And definitely we'll have to have you on there, Wally.
Oh, anytime, Donna. Anytime.
The chat. But, yeah, they can. And then social media, if you want to hook up with me, as far as social media links, just type in my name and you'll get all that information.
You know what? Here's this woman do for y'all, man. On Twitter, her Twitter handle is @DonnaHopkins_. And she only does football stuff, all right? So, like, you talking about, and don't be evil social media. I'm talking about
being
real,
folks. Oh, no, no. It's not only football. I'm basketball.
Oh, she's doing basketball. I'm sorry. I meant sports, Donna.
I'm
talking about sports.
Mad at the Lakers.
All right, I don't want them to see Donna. We can't be talking about them. So, look.
And then as far on Instagram is DJ Hop.
Yeah, DJ. We can't talk about that thing. But, yeah. All right, no. So yeah, that's what
I'll be mad all over.
I don't want to get into it because I'm mad every. I don't even watch games right now because I'm so mad. Like, that's.
And Wally, and you know what? I'm so excited because this is my favorite time of the year.
NCAA. Me too, Donna. I'm in it. You know what I mean?
I can't wait to that song at the end.
One shining moment.
That one shiny moon. That's my favorite.
I know it is.
NCAA. I'm a basketball fanatic too, so I am. You know, I'm gonna be glued in front of the TV for the next, you know, month or so, because the NCAA tournament is where it's at right
Definitely.
Now.
Definitely. I'm actually, you know, we've been interviewing or talking to folks from the MEAC. Spoke to Norfolk State's coach, actually a couple days ago when played on the show. And, you know, they're playing Baylor. I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting for my HBCUs, man.
I like to say congratulations to Howard's women's.
Oh, yes, yes. Program. Yes, they did. They made it to the tournament.
They're making
yes.
it because they're, sure. they're rocking. And I'm so happy for to see them in there and hope that they go far in the tournament.
Definitely, definitely. I want to say, like, big up to, like, MEAC basketball teams in terms of boys and girls. I feel like they brought their game up in terms of competition. They've played – the MEAC's boys and girls have been really, really competitive. So I big ups to them.
Big yeah, but them. Howard hasn't been there for a long time. And to see them back there, you know,
they were a two seed, right?
Off to them.
They were two or one yeah. seed. They were the two seed, right?
I think the two seed. Yeah, but it's almost like a two seed is great. But it's hard, college basketball right now, because that's the great thing about March Madness. You just don't know who's going to come out winning. You think it may be this one? But you got those upsets, and that's what makes the NCAA tournament so great. Mm-hmm. It's one and done, and then you move on.
You know it, Donna. You know it. All right, but Donna, thanks for being on. You know what? I appreciate you. We're going to chat again,
Molly.
All right? We're going to chat again. You already know.
Get your brackets together.
I'm getting them ready, Donna. I'm getting them ready right now. Catch later, Donna.
Later, Wally. Later. It's always great
you know it
chatting
is.
With you.
You know it is. It's always a pleasure. It's a blessing, actually. Thank you, Donna.
Later, Wally.
Later. All right, again, that is Donna Hopkins. You can follow her on Twitter. That's at Donna Hopkins _. That's at Donna Hopkins _. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene. That's Empire Media at empiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content. Hey, I appreciate you all for listening. I appreciate my man Gary Antoine Russell for being on the show. You know, that kid's going to be the one that, he's going to be the next world champ in the welterweight division. You heard it here. Also, appreciate Coach Robert Jones from Norfolk State to take some time to talk to me before, you know, his big game against Baylor, the NCAA tournament. So big ups to Norfolk State. Hope they, you know, pull out the upset. You know what I'm saying? HBCUs, MEAC, let's stay strong, man. Let's combine our love for our, you know, institutions. But, you know, for this team, I don't care you from the University of Maryland, Eastern Shore, Howard, or whatever, like, or, you know, Coppin, Morgan State, we all need to root for Norfolk State. You know what I mean? Because we got to stand together. And also, I want to thank Donna for being on the show. You know, she's always dope. Donna's one of my favorite people. So again, make sure you follow her on Twitter. Anyway, appreciate everybody for tuning in. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. Get it, deuces. A mega, lead us out, big homie. Thank you.